jump up, let's get crazy. Jump up, let's get crazy. Welcome to the fifth preseason Supercoach Coach podcast of season 2018. My name's Marcus, and I'm joined again this week by FB Donkey.
G'day, Captain Hindsight. How are you today, sir?
Yeah, good. Very quickly, we've reached the last positional show of the preseason, Mark. And I know last week you were chomping at the bit for lockout. Have you changed your team since, mate?
Yeah, plenty of changes, mate. Danger injuries, Cruiser potentially injured. There's a lot of reasons to just make a few adjustments around the edges with some really important high-priced players. So, and still waiting on some confirmation of the rookies and where they're all going to be and where I'm going to fit them in. So, yeah, there's actually going to be a few more adjustments, I think. I think I'm always ready about the start of March for lockout, and I always make a few changes, and normally they're pretty good changes.
Before we kick off the show, a reminder about the Supercoach Coach Leagues and the Supercoach Coach Group. There's not much time to join those now, and I've just started sending the ranked league invites out. So if you haven't done so already, jump on board. You only have a few days to get involved in our leagues and our Supercoach Coach Group until lockout kicks off. We'll do one last show for the preseason in another week's time when we'll do a recap of the JLT series, Mark, and have a look at the rookies. So a little bit more time will help in that regard, but I'm sure in both of our minds, that list is starting to shape up a little bit more now. For those that are interested in supporting the show, patreon.com/supercoachcoach is where you can go to do that. Very much appreciate any donations that you could put toward the show. Just makes the show a little bit more sustainable by helping to pay for some of our run costs. All right, Mark, let's get on into the show now. Backline this week. So we'll start off with the higher price players from 2017. First bloke off the run sheet is Michael Hurley. With Sam Doherty injured, he's actually starting the season as the highest averaging backline player from last year. As an Essendon fan, Mark, have you been tempted by him at all this preseason?
No, not at all, mate, to be honest. I'm not quite sure what his upside would be. I don't think he can average a lot more than 102. And his injury history, last season he played 20. That's the most games he's ever played in a season. So, and it was the highest average he's ever had. So look, I think that he can have another really, really good year, but I don't think you're getting any value. I don't think you're getting guaranteed points, and there's some durability concerns. So not in consideration for my team.
Yep, I'd agree with that. Paying 102.5 for a premium key back doesn't seem like what I want to be doing with my Supercoach cash. The next bloke, though, was a defining forward last year, but switched into the back line. Elliot Yeo averaged 102 last year. He plays a bit more of that running back role, can obviously go forward and kick goals as well. He seems like the type of player we're a bit more likely to spend that amount of cash on. Would you see him as a top pick? Because based on scoring potential, he's certainly right up there.
Yeah, he's a really tricky one to get a read on because West Coast have had a few changes in personnel, and it'll be interesting to see what role he has throughout the season. Last season, he seemed to flourish more when he was that loose in defense role. He started off the season. Let me just read out some scores. So first 13 rounds, 139, 102, 83, 141, 59, 150, 125, 109, 71, 104, 104, and 117. So first 13 rounds last season, you would be stoked to pay the price that you're paying now. Like, that's sort of season defining run that can sort of put you in or out of contention pretty quickly, that sort of run. So he's capable of completely destroying the scoring, and his upside is very, very high. Now, which Elliot Yeo are you going to get though? Because after round 13 last year, he only scored one score over 100. He had a lot of 90s in there, but only one over 100 for the rest of the season. So he is a bit of a yo-yo, and I'm not sure which Elliot Yeo you would gonna get. At his current price, you're not getting a lot of value there. He'd need to start off the season the way that he did last year. For me, he's an upgrade target, but I can definitely see why people would start him, and I'm nervous going into the season without him in my team.
He seems like a bloke that I'm more likely to pick just because the options in terms of a top six backline selection aren't really there. Yeah. You have four blokes last year who averaged above 99 that are available this year. The fifth being Doherty, who's obviously done for the season. Hibbard, who we'll get to in a little bit, struggles to play 22. Laird seems like a fair lock, and Hurley is a key position back. So that really only leaves Yeo as the other option. And so even though I don't have the same amount of confidence that, you know, at one stage Yeo was averaging 110 in that early run last year, I don't know that he's quite going to do that, but I would be surprised if he fell too far backward following last year's season. And there's certainly a chance that he could consolidate or even move forward from last year. He won the best and fairest for West Coast last year, his first year doing that. And even though he tailed off a little bit,
he tailed off a fair bit, mate. You've got to be honest with that. Like, he tailed off to sort of a 90 average from a 110 average. So when you say that he couldn't drop off a lot, like, that's the drop off right there.
That's assuming that he's going to keep that sort of 90 average throughout the entire year. Like, the great thing about Yeo, and the reason we're considering him is because he has a massive ceiling as well. So even though, you know, I doubt his ability to average 110, even if he has an average of 90, if he punctuates that with scores of 130, 140, which he's more than capable of, you know, that's not going to get you very far off 95 to 100 based average. I see him still being in the top six backs by end of year, at least, whereas Hurley and Hibbert, I'm not too sure about.
Yeah, the Yeo and Laird do seem like pretty strong locks for that. And so you might not be getting value, but at some point you've got to pay for points on the field every week.
Yeah, and in the back line, because that's harder to find, comparatively, that's a little bit more valuable. Most of the blokes that we're looking at, we're looking between the 90 to 95 bracket. So even though he doesn't possess as much value, the fact that, you know, he's not an older player on a downward trajectory and he's likely to be in the top six, just those two factors might be enough. But I don't discount what you're saying about his likelihood of potentially going back a little bit this year.
Yeah, we may as well talk about it at this point in the show, like, pretty early on, which is the lack of options up back this year. I know that before the forward show, people were saying, gee, there's not many forwards to pick from, but we found heaps that we liked in the forward line on the last show. I don't see them there in the back line this year. There's just not many appealing picks to me at all. And there's a lot of rookies available in the back line or even cheap returning players. So I think that my preference this year is going to be to pick very few backline premiums.
Yeah, I agree with that, Mark. And hopefully that makes this show a little bit shorter, because that adds context in terms of trying to potentially pick some bona fides. But then apart from that, you'd be looking at rookies or even those 200K mid prices to really save in the back line and be a little bit more flexible and wait for cheap upgrades in the back line. So having said that, Mark, we've got, you know, another bloke which we've already referenced, Rory Laird. He's one that probably seems like he quite easily falls in the bona fide bucket. I think both of us, do we lock him in our first show back as the first pick in the back line?
Yeah, he's been in my side since that first show and he hasn't actually moved out. He just seems reliable for points. He seems like he's still on the improve. There's no Brody Smith this year. So I guess the downside of that is that Laird might cop a bit more attention, but his just ability to rack up the ball week after week is reliable and consistent. And that's why I'm happy to pay that sort of price for him.
Absolutely. Michael Hibbard's one that I've expressed some doubt over already. Averaged 99 last year off 18 games. Once he came back into the side off a limited preseason, he didn't look back. He played the rest of the games and he was a bargain at his starting price point. I missed the boat on him last year and I'm normally quite big on Michael Hibbard, but this is his career high in terms of a Supercoach average, and off that basis, I'm a little bit hesitant in picking him up. If I'm going to pay that top-end cash, and like you mentioned, Mark, we're not picking many back-end premiums, it's hard to see myself picking him over Laird or Yeo.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think that from what we've seen in sort of the first preseason game, what we saw last year, and just his age and level of development and at a new club and a new role, like, or a slightly different role, he's been promising this for his whole career. So, look, I think Hibbert's actually a really good pick. He's still going to get a heap of the ball this year. I do think that you raise a valid concern around his durability. Hasn't played 22 games since 2013, but has played a lot of the games on a few years and averaged over 90 three times now. So, look, I don't think that he's going to fall back too much. I think that he could improve a few points. One thing that concerns me a little bit is that Melbourne seem like they've got a lot of improving players that might share the scoring a little bit more this year, which might mean Hibbert gets slightly less ball or slightly less share of the points. But, look, I think that he's very much in consideration for my team and is close to a lock for the top six defenders.
Fair enough, Mark. He's certainly been pretty consistent over his career, so can't begrudge the pick. Jeremy Howe, though, is the next bloke that probably carries a fair bit more risk. We've seen his high-flying potential, but in terms of consistency on the Supercoach park and even position on ground can vary a little bit for Jeremy Howe. Have you considered him at all this preseason? He's starting as the sixth highest averaging backline player.
Yeah, I considered him at the start of last year, and I guess he would have turned out to be an okay pick last year, playing 21 games and averaging 94 without being a great pick. I think that the position concern should be at a minimum now that he seems to have locked down a role in that back line. If he can play through, I think he's likely to average 95 to 100 and have a really good season. The concern with me is that he missed JLT1 with a calf concern, and anybody having calf injuries really, really worries me because they can be repeated quite a lot throughout the year. They can be hard to shake. And so just having a calf injury completely rules him out for me, especially considering, like, I don't see a huge upside at his price. Like you sort of mentioned, he's already priced as a top six defender. So while I think he could still have a good season, there's just too much risk there with that for me to pick him.
Yeah. I think not picking players who've had interrupted preseasons is a pretty good rule when picking a team year to year. Basha Hooley, thoughts on him? He played 18 games last season and averaged 94.1. He's previously spent time as a top six averaging back before, but again, consistency can be an issue with Hooley.
Yeah, and he's also used to have really, really good durability for about four or five seasons, but the last 2 years has started missing some games, which is disappointing, and has had an interrupted preseason, which is, again, enough to rule him out for me. His highest average ever is nearly 95. He's in his, like, 11th season. So I don't really see him all of a sudden jumping up 10 to 15 points like Cade Simpson did a couple of years ago. And so interrupted preseason, no real massive bounce, not getting a huge discount. That's enough to rule him out for me.
Now, we had a question here from Jamie Hall asking about two old stalwarts of the backline in Heath Shaw and Cade Simpson. Are they too dangerous given their age, or have you considered them for potential value? I think they're both interesting from the point of view that in 2017, they were playing alongside great players, taking away sort of rebounding points. But Nathan Wilson has left to Fremantle, and of course, Sam Doherty doing his ACL. Potentially both might have sort of increased scoring opportunities in 2018.
Yeah, and that's why both of them have actually been in consideration for my team this year. I think that Simpson sort of reverted to the mean a bit last year with a 94 average, and that's sort of been like what he's shown across his whole career, just one season where he just had this monster average, which probably wasn't sustainable. At 34 years old, I don't see him going up. I think he's probably a really good, solid pick. He's still super durable. Without Doherty, they think that he's going to score pretty well. You could lock him in without expecting a lot of upside, but just get some regular points every week at a reasonable price. So Simpson wouldn't rule him out, but doesn't make me want to pick him. Heath Shaw is probably a bit more interesting for me just because the last 3 years he actually has played 22 games each season, and last season was his lowest average since his rookie year. And although you could say, yep, that's just sign of a downward swing, you could also say that, like you said, Wilson and Williams are gone and that his role is going to significantly increase this year. So if he could go back to, I know Finlayson's been doing a lot of the kickouts in the preseason, but if Shaw could go back to doing 50% of those kickouts, I think it'd boost his score significantly. He showed in JLT1 that he could get plenty of the ball. I think we've talked about this already in the preseason when you had him as your, I think, first picked in defense, Marcus, that he has had 18 months of poor form now. It wasn't just at the end of last year. It's actually been 18 months. And that is a really long time to then recover from at his age and all of a sudden show really high scoring. If I had to predict right now, I'd say he'd probably average low 90s and therefore he's presenting some value at his price. But I don't think I'm really willing to buy into that right again. I'd hate to pick him and he averaged below 90 again. That would hurt me psychologically more than picking him and he did well would make me feel good about it. So I'm just not willing to take that risk personally.
When you look at the different player profiles on offer and you look at Shaw and Simpson, you do have that psychological potential grief of picking a bloke that is already on a backward slide only for them to slide even further back. Having said that, that fear shouldn't be a reason to pass on either of those two blokes. So it's good to hear that you are considering them, Mark.
Absolutely it should be a fear to pass on both the blokes because this is a game where like that sort of decision can make you like, I'm not checking my team this week. I'm disengaging from this game completely. I know that you're laughing at me and you think that I'm being silly, but you do actually have to protect yourself psychologically in this game sometimes.
Yep, to make the game a bit more bearable, it is a long, it is a long 23 weeks.
We're not just robots picking at the 22 best players that we think are going to score the most or make the most money. And it'd be great if we could do that, but this game also is about having fun and enjoying it.
And we do have to keep that in mind sometimes.
I think in 2018, Shaw is the one that tempts me a little bit more, just because with Simpson, I'm not as sure on the amount of responsibility or dependency Carlton will want to put on him, being a younger team and him being an older veteran. You'd think they want to be developing their kids like Marchbank and Wietering. Whereas Shaw, I mean, if GWS still want to push up into that top four, they've just lost Wilson and Williams is now starting the season injured. You know, Shaw all of a sudden becomes a lot more important a player, and they might, like you said, Mark, give him back some of those kick-ins, give him more of that responsibility to drive the play out of the half-back line, and that's why I'm considering him. All right, next player, Dylan Robertson, averaged 92.6 last year at certain points, looked like an absolute must-have, but injury can be a concern with Robertson, and I understand he hasn't had the smoothest preseason this year either. Thoughts on Robertson, Mark?
Yeah, his first quarter to a half of the season was really, really strong last year, and then he did fade a little bit. And part of that might be a role, and he might be capped with what his role is, because he could be a pure rebound defender, but he has some defensive roles sometimes. He's pretty good at intercept marking. He's a good kick. There's a lot of reasons to pick him, but I just don't think that he's going to have a consistent enough role this year that he will produce premium numbers. So too much risk, not in the conversation for me.
Yeah, and that's a little bit odd considering the upside that he has shown, but I find myself not particularly gravitating toward that pick either. I think after the first half of last year, most people would have found that surprising, you know, considering we're struggling for backline options this year. Are you worried that another player would be cannibalizing his points, or that St. Kilda might not have a lot of points to share around? Where does the doubt lie in terms of consistency, Mark?
Just with that role, I don't think that he's going to be the number one rebounder every week. And like we've seen Savage do that role over the NAB. But it's not as if he's been posting numbers in the preseason screaming to be picked. So there's just not enough there for me to be considering him.
All right, let's talk about Shane Savage then, seeing as you've mentioned him. We did get a question from Greg Fleming about him. Thoughts on Shane Savage? Averaged 100 over the last 7 or 8 rounds and scores of 145 and 114 in the JLT. Those are pretty spicy numbers, Mark.
They are very spicy numbers, sir. And in a season where you're struggling to pick a high-scoring defender, Savage probably does come into the conversation. Often you'd sort of dismiss him a little bit as someone that just posted good preseason numbers and was a bit of a trap, considering he'd sort of never done it before. But yeah, I guess if in a season where there's not many available, you add his late-season form last year to his NAB form this year and what seems to be a clear rebounding role that did net Robertson quite a few points early last year, there's the potential there. And he's at a reasonable price, bit of value. This is where he's an interesting pick compared to Heath Shaw, because they're, so I guess, in the same sort of price bracket. Shaw's got the history on the board. Savage has played, this is his 9th season, he's never averaged 90 or above, so it'd have to be really one out of the box from him. But I guess he's sort of been threatening to do it for quite a while, like he's shown the potential is there. For me, durability concerns are pretty high, but I mean, you're getting the discount for him, so the discount to reward there. So I think that he's probably not likely to make my team, but I can definitely understand why he would be making people's teams, and he could turn out to be a really excellent gamble. So he's the sort of player that I like, someone with quite a lot of upside and not overpriced and a clear role that is going to be lucrative. What do you think?
I just worry that his ability to execute on 100-plus average over the course of 23 rounds has not been realized ever. And even though he's always shown the attributes to be able to do it, being able to do it is another question altogether. I think, you know, your similar concerns about Robertson should be equally applied to Savage. If it's not clear that either one of them will take that rebounding role, I don't know that Savage is necessarily in the box seat over Robertson. Robertson did manage an average of 110 at stretches last year, whereas, you know, Savage has only managed a stretch of 100 over 6-7 rounds, and their price points, they only differ by about 5 points in average, or about 30k. So given the option between the two, I think I'd go with the bloke who's shown a little bit more exposed form over Shane Savage. You know, Robertson played the 22 last year. Savage only broke into the team a bit later on in the season. So I don't know. When I compare the two, it seems tougher to pick Shane Savage over Robertson. All right, next bloke to talk about is Brandon Ellis. Played 22 games last year, averaged 91.4. Has previously averaged more, but he was playing in the midfield. Now he's transitioned to the back line. And even though he's got, you know, the great foot skills, the ability to rack up the ball, he hasn't seemed to be a key user out of the Richmond back line. Do you think he could improve on his position last year, Mark, and be a viable selection this year?
I love him as a draft selection because of his durability and his close to premium numbers, but I'm not sure in the classic game that you can really pick him. I think that he's just too unpredictable. He hasn't shown enough over the JLT. His role is a bit unpredictable and he hasn't shown scoring potential really coming out of the back line. I think that there's not enough chance that he's going to boost his average to pick him.
I can see a Richmond supporter taking a punt on him, but you'd want to have a little bit more of an inside scoop. Otherwise, he could very much tread water this year. How about Jeremy McGovern, Mark? He's one that played 22 games last year, even though he has had questionable injury history previously. Averaged only the 91 last year, but has, in patches, you know, averaged 105. High scoring potential, high injury history, questions over consistency. Quite a classic tall back selection. Would you take the risk on him in 2018?
I think the concern with McGovern to some extent is how he plays through injury. I swear I've seen him like go off the ground a couple of times and you're like, oh, well, he's done for the season. And then half a quarter later, he'll be back on the field. He just has this ability to play through some of those injuries. And while that's awesome, it's not great for his scoring potential because he's not obviously not going to be playing at his peak if he's doing that. So look, I think that he could put in a big season 1 year, but it'd be very hard to predict when that is. And I'm not sure he's going to consistently put up the big numbers. So no for me at the moment, but it's not a really hard no.
I don't know. I struggle with picking the key backs. Even the best interceptors in the game can struggle to score points consistently. And I think Alex Rance is a good example of that. He's averaged 98 two seasons in a row and last year dropped to an average of 90. Therefore, though, presents a little bit of value for season 2018. Are you potentially a bit more tempted on Rance than you are McGovern?
Not really. I think that Rance, as you say, is the sort of player that you pick up for 400,000 at some point during the season. Because he can post some really big scores to get his price right up, but he can also post some of those lower ones where he has a really strong defensive role. So I don't think Rance is a good starting selection.
I mean, has even more defensive responsibility, arguably, than McGovern, who has even more of a license to just fly for those intercept marks. These two blokes, ideally, you pick up 90K cheaper. Jake Lloyd, though, is a bloke that has an inherent discount worked into his average after scoring a 4 in round 10 last year with a bit of a concussion. Played 21 games, averaged 87.5. Just looking at his 2018 scores in isolation, you'd got to think, oh, there's a bit of value on offer there. Have you been tempted at all, Mark, by Jake Lloyd?
No, not saying the Lloyd love at all, to be honest, mate. I know that he had a 4 last season. But he also had a lot of big scores early in the season. So in the first 12 rounds, he had 6 scores over 100 and a few high 90s in there as well. And all of that occurred when Sydney was struggling as a team. And Sydney didn't have their full midfield up and running. So Lloyd was like getting some really high possession numbers and playing further up the field. So when he moved back into that more outside wing half back role in the second half of the season, he didn't actually post a score over 100 after round 12. So I think that the Sydney midfield is full enough at the moment that Lloyd is going to continue with that halfback wing role. And so will struggle to be averaging in those high 90s to 100, which is what you really need from him. So not in consideration for me at all, mate.
Yeah. And I think, you know, not everyone has the nous when it comes to Supercoach selections or even sort of fanaticism to be able to contextualize a season against relative position throughout the year and the injury status of the rest of your teammates. So that's a very good call out on Lloyd, Mark. When you look at his individual season of scoring, you think, oh, there's value to be had there. But if you dive a little bit deeper and look at where he scored his points and where he'll get to play this year, he does certainly become a little bit sketchier in terms of a potential selection. Luke McDonald, Mark's, I know a bloke that you referenced earlier on in the preseason. In the first show back, you talked about him being a bit of a smoky selection. Played 22 games last year, averaging 84. He played a split of back and mid time last year, but this year apparently he's going to move into the midfield and realize his potential as a talent. There's a lot of talk though for a bloke that ended up drinking a little bit too much and missing the second JLT. Ideally, with a selection like that, you'd like to see some exposed four, Mark.
Yeah, I think that like everything indicates to me that he has an average boost in him and it could be 10 points or so, which means you're getting a fair bit of value at his price and getting someone that would be equal to a premium defender. But what I'd want to see from him is a couple of JLT games where he's done really well and played clearly in that midfield role. He doesn't even have to do it for whole games. He just has to have some couple of really, really good quarters or good halves where you're like, yep, this is exactly what I expect to see for the rest of the year. But we didn't get to see that from Luke. So that just puts too many unknowns into the air, which makes it really, really difficult to pick him. So it might have to be one that I consider for draft.
Jack Crisp is a bloke similar to Ellis and McDonald in terms of a selection. Lots of talent, but a bit more reliant on becoming consistent and lifting their basement a little bit in order to be considered a premium. Averaged 83 last year, playing 22 games. It was his first move permanently into the back line. Would you consider Crisp at all in 2018? He certainly showed an improve in scoring when he moved from the wing to the back line last year. His ceiling seemed to have dropped a little bit, but his consistency and basement lifted to about that 80 mark, which is what you want to see.
Based on his scoring history, I can't actually see him being a reasonably decent pick. The fact that he's played 22 the last three seasons is really promising as well. I would have, again, a bit like Luke McDonald, I would have just liked to see a bit more over the preseason to convince me, like, although there's some reasons to pick him based on last year, what are the reasons to pick him this year, and is he likely to continue in those roles? And I'm not sure I saw enough evidence that makes me want to do that. So at this stage, not in consideration for me.
Next bloke, Jason Johannesson. He played 20 games last year and averaged 82. He's had both frustrations in terms of injury and getting on the park and also scoring consistency. And due to his potency and the fact that he did so well in the grand final the previous year, he seemed to be tagged out of games as well on a few occasions last year. All three of those are pretty large concerns and has me staying away from JJ, but he has averaged 95 in a season before. Yeah. Would you consider him?
No, not at all, mate. I think that there is a chance that he gets back to 95 over the course of a season. That chance seems pretty low, though, considering there's some durability concerns there as well. Considering he now seems to be playing a lot more forward than in defense, the chances are just too low of that happening. So although it's exciting and fun to have, and obviously a really good player, not in consideration for me.
The next bloke who's priced pretty similarly actually falls into quite a similar bucket as well, I reckon. That's Christian Salem, 437,000. Only played 16 games, struggled with an interrupted preseason last year, averaged 80. Might not get a whole heap of the ball, but can make a lot of the ball. But because of that variance in terms of Supercoach scoring, is quite high. Would you consider Salem any more seriously than JJ, Mark?
Again, another player to consider for draft, I think. There's just too many risks and concerns, as you mentioned. Talk of him moving a bit more into the midfield this year, and he's had a really, really strong preseason. So the indications are there that he could jump up to a 90-plus average, and I think that it's even like a reasonable chance of that happening. But with his durability concerns and the amount of unknowns, it's very hard to pick someone like that. The chances of it happening are not really high enough, and so there's probably just better ways to use your money.
And I think in the back line with the poorer scoring options, there's a tendency to take more risks on blokes who are averaging in the 80 range and hope they move out to that 90, 95 range. They can tend to be trap picks, as we've seen with players like Jack Watts in the past, Mark. So I think quite a few of these players, even though they show sort of a fair bit of potential, their price point sort of means that you do have to be relatively confident in order to take the plunge. So I think I like your characterization of that pick, Mark. Dane Rampey is another bloke that could potentially fall into that same bucket. Only played the 15 games last year, but was reasonably durable prior to that. Averaged 77. Before that, though, he had averaged 85 in 2016, 88 in 2017. Everyone had talked about him continuing that upward trajectory into eventually being a full-blown premium, but hasn't quite converted into being a true premium in Supercoach land yet.
Yeah.
Do you see that changing in 2018?
Those are huge numbers in the first JLT game, and we'll be looking to have a great season after breaking his leg in the late preseason last year. So, look, I think that he has the potential to jump up to low 90s, and you are getting a fair bit of a discount there. Is that going to be enough of a reward on someone, and is it worth taking the gamble on Rampey? I think he could pick worse. I think his ceiling isn't there, which is probably why he's not really in consideration for me. But look, it's hard to argue against him as a reasonable pick with almost guaranteed upside at his price. It's just whether you see that upside going into premium numbers or falling a little bit short.
All right, next question here is from Jay Debrincat. He's asking about James Sicily and whether or not he's worth a defensive position or whether or not you'd put him forward. Based on our conversation so far, we are struggling to find more premium selections in the back line as in the forward line. So when given a choice between a good dev forward premium and whether or not to play them in the back line or a forward line, I assume you pick the back line, Mark?
Yes, that's exactly right. And because there's so many rookies available in the back line, yeah, I think that if you're picking Sicily, more than likely in the back line, depending on team structure and what premiums you like. Some people might be listening to this show and thinking that they like lots of defensive premiums relative to forwards, and that's okay. So in that situation, you might have a different answer. Look, if Sicily was 450,000 and single position, I don't think I'd consider picking him at all. But he's 400,000 and dual position, which does open some flexibility as the season goes on. Even if you don't have that link there with a rookie or with another player, whether you start Sicily back or forward, you can still move him around when you're trading to the other position. And that is an advantage to your team. And I think that once he moved back last year, he did score significantly better. And over the preseason, it looks like he's going to continue that role. Can be a bit inconsistent. He did get tagged out against Carlton late last year and scored a 25, which is very concerning, but he surrounded that with three scores over 100. So look, Sicily, I think, did enough in JLT1 to be very, very high on people's agendas. He's been in my team for quite a while. I don't know about you, Matt.
I have seen him in a lot of preseason teams, but to be honest, there are a few blokes that I'd more likely take the risk on than Sicily. I think Rampy and Crisp, even McDonald, I'd be a little bit more confident in because of either sort of more time in the system, more time playing a high level of football, or potentially a bit more opportunity with McDonald moving into the midfield. So I can see the reasons for picking him, but he seems a bit too imbued with risk for me to quite take the punt. All right, next bloke, Andrew McGrath, priced at 388,000. Talk is he's going to move into the midfield and go from strength to strength. We've seen Clayton Oliver smash out an amazing average off his second year in the comp, Mark. Do you think McGrath can follow in those footsteps?
No, I don't. Look, Oliver was playing like exclusively midfield. McGrath will sort of play halfback, wing, midfield, so among those three positions. And he does seem at the moment to be a little bit handball happy. The way he gets the ball is he sort of digs under packs and grabs the ball, or he's just part of a handball chain. I think he shows all signs of being an absolute gun of the competition, so it wouldn't surprise me at all if he averaged more than 90 this year. A lot of those superstars do seem to be able to average 90 in their second year, 90 plus. So look, it wouldn't surprise me one little bit if he does it. I'm just not sure where the points at Essendon are going to go this year and whether it might be a little bit too early for him. So we saw with Callum Mills last year, going to be an absolute gun, but stalled on his price. Mills also got caught staying in the back line, whereas McGrath won't. So I do expect McGrath to up his average. It's just whether, like, he might end up with an 85 to 87 average, which is, it's just not enough for a defensive premium. So even when you're getting that sort of discount. So I don't want to say don't pick him because I think the potential is there, but I just think it might be a little bit low and not really in consideration for my team.
I think if you knew that the number one draft selection last year was moving from the back line to a full-time mid position, he'd be a lot more attractive an option as a bloke that's going to continue to split his time in the back line and on the wing, where as a halfback, the premiums average 95, and on the wing, you know, most of the decent wingers, even a gaff type can struggle. They're both positions where even the best in the comp can struggle to average 100. And based off that, you'd be a bit more nervous in picking a second year player in those positions. Move on to the next question here. This one's from Nathan DeMello asking about Jake Kelly and whether or not there's potential in him as a selection. If he's going to be stepping into Jake Lever's role, played the 21 games last year and only averaged 59. So you'd be looking at a fairly large jump in order to keep him as a premium. But at that price point and considering the options available, even if you had to trade him out, it probably wouldn't be the end of the world. Would you consider that a win, or would you want to see premium
numbers? So what's your price tag?
To select him, Mark. 325.
Yeah, probably a little bit expensive. I think at 275, you'd be happy to take that sort of risk. But at 325, I think you're really looking at someone to average high 80s at a minimum. And I probably don't know enough about him, but that does seem like a big jump. If you know a lot about Adelaide and you think he's really going to take that role, you would have to be banking on him becoming a premium, though. You're not using 325 as a stepping stone or a moneymaker. I think you need to be under 300 to be doing that.
Next question's about Angus Brayshaw. He just misses that lip as well, being 317,000. Only played the 5 games last year, struggling with injury. But in his 3rd year, if he gets back to playing in the midfield, you'd think there's a fair bit of points on offer there. But it looks like he'll still spend a fair bit of time down back, Mark.
Yeah, I don't see him averaging premium numbers for the year. So it'd be great to see him do well. I think if it was 250,000, then a lot of teams would actually have him in. But at 317, you just need him to score too many points, and the chances of that are just too low for me.
How about a bloke who's been in the system a little bit longer? Jackson Thurlow, priced at 300K. Last year, returning from an ACL, didn't play the full season, got dropped a bit, and struggled with his points scoring as well. Jackson Thurlow previously averaged 80-plus in the back line, just underneath that 300K lip mark. Does that change things for you and how you'd consider a player like Thurlow?
I know that the Geelong supporters absolutely love him and potentially overrate him a little bit. He did score 91 in the second JLT. When he averaged over 80, they didn't have Tui in the side. I think that he's now the main outlet coming out of the back line. Honestly, he's not even in remote consideration for my team. Maybe you know more than I do though.
He spent quite a bit of time on the wing last year compared to previously where he'd spent a bit more time driving the ball out of halfback. I think that potentially changes a little bit with Mackey retiring and him recovering from the ACL with another year under his belt, but still not really a consideration for mine either. I could see the potential value, but I think I'd want him to be about 250K to take that plunge. You'd be hoping for a 90 average off a 300K price tag, and I'm not sure he can do that. Next player, Riley Bonner. He's one that's had a great JLT, Mark, and really has come into focus since then. 257,000 is his starting price tag. So an average of about 85 would see us pretty happy and seem be a decent starting selection. Do you see him realizing that sort of scoring?
He's a tricky one because he JLT 1, he didn't look likely at all. But in JLT 2, he looked really, really good. I mean, he only scored 78, but he did seem to be playing really well, and there does seem to be a position for him in that side. And at that price point, I think that high 80s or 85 is probably unlikely for him. I think you might be looking more at being happy with 75. And I guess it's all going to depend on the rookies, really. I think he comes into consideration along with a few other players like Corey Ellis, Alex Pierce, Kieran Byrne at that price point. I think he's sort of in competition with them for one of your spots, depending on how many rookies you're playing up back. And if there are a lot of cheap rookies up back, then the need for someone like Bonner diminishes significantly.
Alex Pierce has definitely been talked up a little bit in terms of his leadership prospects and how they see him in their best 22. He seems like a player that does potentially hold a fair bit of value and is about as cheap as these sort of blokes get at 230,000. A taller player, a 200-centimeter player who plays key back. So from that point of view, potentially will be a bit more limited in his scoring. How do you rank Pierce alongside Bonner?
Yeah, Pierce not really in consideration for me at all. I remember having him in his rookie season, really liked him then. Love him as a player. Read all those articles that you're talking about his leadership potential, but his scoring capacity just doesn't seem to be there. You're sort of looking at 60s to 65s because he's a key defender. And those sort of scores at that price, considering there's a lot of rookies available, he's just not going to cut it. So I think that Bonner would definitely be ahead.
Kieran Byrne is one that has a little bit more of an attacking flair to the game. In his 5th year, priced at 229,000, so pretty much the same price as Pierce. Playing for Carlton, you think he'd get his fair run of opportunities. Has struggled to stay on park previously though, but I suppose he's a stepping stone at best. So as long as he stays enough on park to go up in price, it's not the end of the world if he gets injured.
I think he's got a bit of a higher ceiling than Pierce and that bit cheaper than Bonner. So he's in consideration, had a good JLT one, could potentially fill the Doherty role a little bit. Like, obviously nobody's going to replace Doherty, but he could potentially fulfill that role a little bit. So look, I think that he is someone that could actually have a really good season. Didn't show it against the Hawks, but maybe that was just in Tassie and it was a weird game. I think that he should be someone strongly considered, yes.
Actually, of all the cheap blokes, the next guy that we're going to mention, I think, has probably got the most promise, and that's Corey Ellis. He's the shortest of the blokes and probably the most likely to be attacking. Priced at 228,000, has played around the 20 games, entering his 4th year, a former pick 12, so hasn't quite realized his full potential. Struggles to get a lot of the ball, but when he does, seems to make decent decisions with it. Just hasn't commanded enough of the ball to warrant selection in Richmond's team. They got a lot of blokes or high draft picks that they started off with an education in the back line. So I guess you look at Ellis and Vlostwin. You think Corey Ellis might finally move into their best 22 this year, Mark?
Look, I think he raised some really good points, and he scored pretty well from low time on ground in the second JLT. I just think that what you talk about there is he going to be best 22? You don't want to be asking that about a player that you're picking in your team at over 200,000. You want to be very sure that they're best 22, and you really start talking about their scoring potential rather than their spot in the team. So maybe you know more about Richmond than me. Maybe you have more confidence on him than me, and therefore he becomes a really good pick. But I don't like to be worried whether my $200,000 player is going to be picked from week to week.
Emergency in the grand final last year, you'd think that they'd have a view to increase his exposure, but there's a whole bunch of blokes that are still fighting for spots in that Richmond side. So I think that's a fair point, Mark. Having said that, though, if he's listed round one, would you get tempted, Mark?
No.
All right, Mark, that wraps up the backline show. Is there anything that you wanted to add or any messages to our listeners to wrap up the backline show?
I guess my team is focusing on picking as many rookies as possible in the backline because there seems to be a lot available. And the difference between a backline rookie's scoring and a backline premium scoring is not as great as it might be in other positions. So yeah, I think that it's a good year to not actually pick too many of these premiums that we've been talking about and have some rookies back there. Whereas in the forward line, it's almost the opposite case. So I guess the other thing that I just wanted to raise was it might be the JLT, but the Bombers did beat the Cats. So go Dons.
Nice one. That was a close game. At least it was an interesting one. And with that, we'll just mention again, patreon.com/supercoachcoach if you're looking to support the show, and a last chance to join our Supercoach Coach leagues and our group on supercoachcoach.com.au. And with that, we will catch you all very shortly for the last show of the preseason. Good luck picking your teams. There's only a week to go. Catch you soon.
See ya.
See ya.